This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. UFC 234, the champ, Robert Whittaker, taking on Kelvin Gastelum for the middleweight championship of the world in Australia. The co-main event is Anderson Silva taking on Israel Adesanya. I am your host of Fight IQ, the Daily Fantasy Sniper. We're going to talk all things UFC 234 from a DraftKings perspective. Our analyst for the show, as always, it is Chris Olsen and Joe Sunsu. Guys, are you ready for this card, which I think is actually going to be better than people think? I wouldn't pay $60 for it. Hint, hint, that's all I'm going to say. But I do think it's a good card overall. It's a better than your average fight night card. Thoughts on that, Chris?
No, I agree. I think from a DK perspective, certainly it's interesting. I think the real challenge here is going to be, because there are a lot of strong fighters in that 9K or close range. So the real challenge here is going to be deciding which of those 9K fighters you have to play and which you have to leave off. And there's going to be maybe like a note of precision that you have to employ here that you normally don't necessarily need in other contests. So it's definitely going to be interesting.
Yeah, I agree. We're hurting for underdogs this week. A lot of 9K fighters we like. On weeks like that, it's always find the right one, maybe two underdogs, plus really key in on these mid-range fights for your tournaments. That's how I generally see things. Joe, how is this card shaping up from you top to
bottom? Let's put it this way. It can't be any worse than last week, which was a horrific
for everyone.
Card for me. For those of you who follow me on Twitter, I'm not lobbying for followers here, but I made a kind of a horrific real world example of how my night was worse than that, which a lot of people thought was quite humorous. It's the first time in recent memory where, my core was so incredibly tight with Moicano and Ramos that my night was effectively over when Ramos scored 1 point. I had a few other lineups, but Moicano, you know, it just killed it. I had nothing to look forward to. I did not get a dollar back in my outlay. So this week has got to be better than last week. I am feeling a lot better about it. There are a couple of dogs that I think have legitimate chances to win or perform strongly. So let's move on.
Yep. Let's do our usual intros. I will say off the bat, guys, if you can't tell, I am a little bit hoarse this week. I've been under the weather since Monday. So if you hear any breaks, it's because I'm muted and coughing. And if my voice sounds scratchy, I apologize. We will get through it. But let's move on to bigger and better.
Same here, guys. Yeah. just as an FYI. And Sean and I do not live together, so we didn't catch it from each other.
Why would you even throw that out there, Joe? That's going to be brutal and shit.
Well, I'm letting people know that, you know, we both independently got sick at the same time, which, you know, is going to, you know, some suspicious people out there are going to say, what are you guys doing? And I'm like, we each have wives. We don't live together. I mean, come on.
That was rough. Anyway,
yeah.
Fight IQ brought to you by RotoWire MMA. Thanks to those guys. Make sure to go to rotowire.com/free. 10-day free trial to all their usually premium content that is behind the paywall for free. 10 days, no credit card required. Season-long optimizer, daily fantasy, obviously, NBA, MMA, PGA, anything you want.
Baseball.
They have it. MLB coming back up. Make sure and check them out. I'll also plug all of our Twitters. I'll do the shameless plugging. I'm at the DFS Sniper, 1S in that. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Joe is at Sun Tzu. I'm going to take a quick sip of my very manly tea with honey, and we'll break down the first fight.
Wow.
Listen, nice. Guys, you do whatever you have to do to stay healthy and stay in the game. I was not missing this. All right. We have – we don't start the main event, Sean. Waleji Byrne, 7,700, taking on Jonathan Martinez at 8,500. I said those names inverted for a reason. Byrne's a dog I like. He's plus 130. Martinez is minus 150. Thankfully, I'm sure the listeners would agree because of my voice, I'll do a little less talking this week, and you guys will hear more of Chris.
So yes, I'll be here to pick up the slack, guys.
Let's see how this goes. But don't worry, I will be saving my voice to put either of these two in their place. Chris, how do you have this fight?
I like Byrne quite a bit as a fighter in general. I think we agree
off the bat. Lame.
He's got a real well. I'm trying to help you save your voice, man. No, I like him as a fighter in general. I think he's just a real regular meat and potatoes, like pressure, strong overhand takedown guy. He's durable. He's powerful enough to hurt you. He doesn't have knockout power or anything, but he's powerful enough to change the fight. And Jonathan Martinez is just sort of like, I mean, I don't know. He's got a good kicking game. He's got good jiu-jitsu, but he's very willing to be pressured. And I think Byrne is going to be the stronger man in the clinch here. And so that's basically why I'm picking Byrne. I think that when this fight gets to the ground, Byrne's going to have to watch his arms, watch his neck, because Martinez has a good bottom game. But apart from that, in a card where we're hurting for dogs, as we said in the open, I think Byrne is a really good spot here at 7,700.
I actually don't like what I've seen from the bottom game of Martinez. All the more reason to like Byrne is a matter of Byrne hasn't shown that he can do much on top. That's what has to change here. But a grappling-based live dog at 7,700 in this card. Joe, you interested?
Yeah, I mean, I have to be. The trends are also moving in the direction of Byrne. There's, you know, the odds, the lines are tightening up. The only thing I really like about Martinez is his camp. You know, he's I think he's a Factory X guy, which I kind of like. That's been a hot camp recently. I just don't know that he's UFC ready. Buren's also got his back up against the wall. I mean, Chinese fighter or no, he's coming up against two straight losses. I can't imagine the UFC would keep him around coming off of a third. I do think that the floor is much higher than the ceiling here, which I guess is okay if you're looking for dogs. I think he could be an interesting play in cash, although I'm not playing much cash this week. The GPPs are way too juicy. I could see him, you know, again, being having some safety, a safe floor in cash. But again, I'm going to, I guess, make it the trifecta here. I like, I'm going to pick Buren for the upset as well.
That was an awful time cough. I didn't have to cough the entire time you guys were talking.
Yeah.
I heard Joe wrapping up and I went, son of a. All right. Jalen Turner, 8,700, taking on Callan, or as Joe's going to call him, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
At 7,500. Jalen Turner is the favorite, minus 245. Comeback on Potter is plus 205. I like Turner a bunch. I will say my only concern with Turner is that he is boom or bust, and he is literally – this fight is days after his suspension, his medical suspension is up from his recent trip to the Shadow Realm that Vicente Luque gave him. Other than that, I like Turner. Joe, how about for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the only thing that gives me pause is that one of our good friends and someone who's been on a real roll lately has kind of endorsed – Potter a bit. That gives me a little pause. However, you know, my own independent research, you've got a 34-year-old guy who has fought on the Australian regional scene, who has got no cardio, who has, you know, essentially has to win on the ground. Oh, by the way, he's slow. His striking defense is porous. Going up against a dynamic striker. And here's what's really scary. Is that, and I know there's been much said about how this Harry Potter guy trains with Dan Kelly. However, if you look at his gym, it's scary that he's actually the striking coach at his gym, which I got to think, like, you know, how hard up is the gym when Harry Potter is the striking coach. I like Turner here. Yeah, there's obviously some risk if this fight goes outside of the first round. Quite honestly, I didn't think he looked all that bad moving up a weight class, you know, in the first round against Luque. I mean, he actually, I believe he landed 31 significant strikes, which is impressive, you know, because he was clearly overmatched in fighting up a weight class. So
he won a large majority of that round. He got knocked out at the end. If he doesn't get knocked out there, you could argue he won that round 10-9 against Luque.
Yeah, I thought he looked really good. I mean, you know, obviously it's hard to say someone looked good getting destroyed, but
until he threw the spinning back fist.
Exactly. I thought he looked pretty good in that fight. So, you know, and then the other narrative on Potter is a lot of people are making, and this is just a general rule of thumb, a lot of people are making a big deal over, and Potter has said it as much in interviews, like, I'm going to use my BJJ black belt. Like, let's tell people that all black belts are not created equal. You know, like, if you're a Renzo Gracie black belt, I would probably put that up, and I'm not besmirching his accomplishments or saying that his teacher is inferior. But let's be honest, there are different levels of black belts and who you study under to get it. So that's all I'm going to say. I like Turner here quite a bit. I think it could get interesting if this fight gets outside of the first round. But I think Turner is a guy you should target. Great inside the distance prop. High likelihood of a finish. There is some risk, but I'm on Turner here. Been a big way.
Chris, how about for you?
Yeah. In fact, I'm kind of curious of what our friend's argument was for Potter. Can you sum it up in like a sentence, Joe?
I haven't read the whole thing. I said Joe, but it's mostly that Potter didn't look very good, and the grappling, which I didn't. You know, the grappling I watched in Potter wasn't. I mean, just body locks.
Right. Yeah.
If Turner's just got to keep off his back, and the recent injury that nasal fracture that Turner suffered, that if he didn't get cleared by a doctor would have resulted in a year-long suspension.
Yeah.
And that he's home in Australia, and just that he thinks Turner's overrated.
All right, fair enough, I guess. I like Turner a whole bunch here. Joe mentioned it in his breakdown there. Potter's just very slow. And in his last fight on the regionals against a guy named BJ Bland, he was getting lit up by counter shots constantly because he's just such a slow striker. He strikes me as someone who has done well on the regional scene just by virtue of being the bigger guy in the weight class so that he can use his judo. And that's not really going to be the case here. I mean, he might have like a bigger, like, you know, filled in frame than Jalen Turner, but Turner's a long, tall guy. He's quite strong himself, so that's not going to be a problem here. And the speed, Turner's got a lightning fast jab. He puts his combinations together well. I think the in and out movement, it's going to be hard for Potter to even get a hold of him. If he does, that might be an issue, but you know, I expect Potter to just light him up and honestly eventually finish him. So yeah, I like him quite a bit, honestly.
All right, let's move on to Lando Venata at 9,300, taking on Marcos Mariano at 6,900, the good friend of Anderson Silva. That's why he's in the UFC. Don't get it twisted. Venata, -430. Comeback on Mariano / Rosa, you see him listed in some places, is +345. Chris, what do you think of our boy Groovy, who is 0-2-2 in his last four UFC fights?
Well, I think that he's fighting someone with the best nickname of all time, Dalsim, of Street Fighter fame. And if you look at him, I mean, the name's accurate. He's got maybe the longest legs I've ever seen on a fighter. He's sort of built, he's sort of got that breadstick build where the legs are just really thin. And I mean, not the most muscular guy in the world, but there it is. The one thing it's odd that you notice about the guy when you first look at him is, I think it's a criminal that a guy with legs that long doesn't have any jujitsu off his back, but he doesn't.
He is on the ground.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't really make any sense to me. You would think a Brazilian guy with long legs would just be a default, but I guess not. You know, those of you who follow this podcast might know that I've picked against Venata in every single fight he's had in the UFC. I will break that record here. Mariano is just way too inactive. He'll throw a head kick sometimes, but he's way too prone to getting backed up. He has zero takedown defense. I've watched two fights of his. He was mounted in both of them. It doesn't look like he has defense to anything. And Venata, look, he gets hit a lot. So is it out of the question he gets hit with a head kick? No, but the thing about Venata is he's very hard to hurt and very hard to put down. He's been cracked in a lot of his fights, and he's come back swinging. So even if he manages to get hit with like a head kick or something, because Venata always seems to get hit pretty hard, I expect him to come through it. I expect him to just be way too much for this dude who has lost by strikes before in his career. And I'm going to have a lot of Lando Venata, and I think you should too.
I'm assuming I'm going to have to steal some of Joe's thunder, but everybody forgets, and hope I pray to God he uses it. Venata has a wrestling game.
Yeah.
He's got a D1 wrestling background he just doesn't use.
Yep.
Joe, how do you see this fight?
So first of all, like, let's everybody give some applause to the real Chris Olsen. I mean, you know, for those of you who think that, you know, Central New Jersey and being a Renaissance man are polar opposites, you had Chris quoting poetry last week. You know, this week he's making Street Fighter references. He is truly a man of the world.
I am a man of the people.
Although he did, you know, momentarily get suspended from college for asking his female poetry professor for some help with his Longfellow. He didn't appreciate that all that much.
That was weak. In any case,
you know, he tries to get on Twitter first, and then they don't work there, and he brings
I stole that from Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School. Anyway.
Great movie.
I mean, here's the narrative. So, believe it or not, the UFC gave Lando Venata a five-fight deal. Now, all from what I understand, all UFC contracts are voidable if a fighter loses two in a row. So I think what was happening is Anderson Silva doesn't like to fly by himself. So he said, hey, I got this buddy. I would like him to travel with me from Brazil to Australia. You know, look, your guy Lando needs a win. You know, my guy needs some frequent flyer miles. So let's like put him on a flight and send him to Brazil. If Lando does not crush here, I mean, I will lose all faith, and this could be the biggest pork chop I've ever eaten. So
yeah, this will be a bad one.
I got to think that Lando, I mean, I will have maybe one share just because I learned my lesson last week. I will maybe have one lineup just because, you know, anything can happen. I will have one lineup with the other guy in it, but I have not done a lot of study on him. Mm-hmm.
If that's one more than I'll have.
If this is a gimme spot, it's the definition of gimme spot. So yeah, I'm all over Lando.
Yeah, if I end up losing because Marcos Mariano beats me, then you know what? I'll just move on to next week.
Yeah, really.
All right, Taruto Ishihara at 6,800, taking on Kung Ho Kang, who's priced up at 9,400. The odds on this one: Kang's the favorite, -360. Ishihara, the comeback, is +300. Yashobo is 1-4 in his last five, with that one win coming under against Rolando Dai, who is, you know, a really strong. No, he's not good, guys. He's a terrible fighter. Taruto Ishihara, he lost to Artem Lobov, right?
He did lose to Artem Lobov.
To the GOAT. Yeah.
He lost to the GOAT, so we can't hold that against him. Do you think he gets back to his winning ways here, or does Joe or does Kang bounce back after his split decision loss to Hamosh last time out?
I mean, obviously the narrative here is that, you know, based on his recent performance, that split decision lost against Hamosh is not looking all that good. However, look, Ishitara's got a puncher's chance, which is why I'll have a few lineups of him. However, for those of you that want to know what Ishihara is all about, go watch the Greg Maynard fight, where Maynard, you know, who's basically he's a shot fighter himself, and who I believe is since retired, took him down, I believe, 11 or 12 times in that fight. There's no reason to expect that Kang will not do the same here. So, you know, even at his price point, I think he offers better value than the guy at the top. Although I will have a few shares again of Ishihara because he does have heavy hands. But I like Kang quite a bit here.
What's that about for you?
Yeah. You know, Ishihara is kind of interesting to me. I'm not picking him here, but I think you could be forgiven in a card that's hurting for dogs, as we said, for giving him a shot. I mean, he's a pretty good in and out striker. He's been trying to integrate wrestling a little bit more recently.
It's not good.
Well, no, you know, it's fine. He did have a nice blast double on Peter Yan. It didn't last. It didn't amount to anything, but, you know, he did land it. I think that this is going to be a much more forgiving matchup for Ishihara than Gray Maynard or the aforementioned Peter Yan, who are way more suffocating pressure fighters than
Kang is huge, by the way. Kang is enormous for this weight class.
Sure, yeah, but Kang is very he very much goes with the flow of the fight, and by that I mean if you let him pressure you, he can pressure you, but if you take that pressure from him, he will let you back him up. And I think Ishihara is going to have some success pressuring. I think he's going to have a lot more space to do what he wants to do. Kang is basically a counter striker. He's a good solid striker. He's got power. The only reason I would say, you really got to be kind of cautious with Ishihara here in general is because Kang is actually quite a strong wrestler, and I would say probably stronger than Ishihara. He's almost certainly a better grappler than Ishihara is if the fight does go to the ground. So for that reason, I have to end up picking Kang here. I will say that some of his takedown defense against Maynard didn't look that bad, but I don't know how that can hold up in three rounds. I got Joe Leffen, so we'll see what that's about in a second. But yeah, I mean, what is that? 6,800, right? Wow.
Ishihara?
Huh?
Ishihara?
Yeah. Ishihara, 6,800,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No, I think he's 7'2".
No, he's...
Was he 68?
68.
Okay.
68, yeah.
So our next fighter is 7'2".
Okay. So, a guy who can surprise with power. And, I mean, look, Guido Canetti hurt Kang in their fight. Ramos was hitting them with some good shots. Now, I mean, Ishihara is not really the combination puncher that Ramos is or has been. He wasn't in his last fight for God knows what reason. But I think Ishihara is live here. Maybe not like live enough to take a bunch of shots on, but if you need a couple differentiators and something that might break the slate, yeah, give it a shot.
All right. We spent enough time talking about Taruto Ishihara. Let's move on to Kai Kara France at 9,000, taking on Raulian Paiva at 7,200. Raulian is +190. Should just call him Paiva. I went back to the first name because I butchered it the first time. Kai Kara France, -230. These are flyweights. I was impressed with Kai Kara France on The Ultimate Fighter. Didn't get a contract, lost in the semis, rattled off a bunch of wins. One is UFC to get into the UFC. One is UFC debut against Elias Garcia. And here he is in a dying division, taking on a Dana White Tuesday Night Contender Series Brazil alum in Paiva. Chris, how do you have this fight?
Yeah, I like Kai Kara France a lot here. My only question will be if he's able to get a finish. He's up against a guy who's never been finished by strikes. The 18-1 record is kind of inflated.
It's not.
It's not inflated? You like it?
Yeah, I'll tell you why when you're done.
I would love to hear it. But his fight in the Contender Series, it was just so worrying because it's a guy who doesn't have a lot of power. Kai Kara France has fast hands, and his opponent basically anytime he wanted to throw, a 1-2 combination was really landing pretty cleanly and bouncing off the guard, especially in round two when he got tired. I mean, he was basically a stationary target. What saved him in that fight was his wrestling and scrambling ability. And we saw in the Garcia fight that Kai Kara France is no slouch in that department. So while I'm willing to probably concede that the opponent has better jiu-jitsu here, I think Kai Kara France could at least make that competitive if they go to the ground, maybe get back to his feet. And once they're on the feet, I don't think this is going to be very close at all. So my pick is France. You have to decide if he can get a finish, if he's worth the price. But the pick to win the fight is France.
For me, before Joe goes, this fight is just, it comes down to Kai Kara France, I think, is faster and more technical. And Paiva is younger guy, more room to grow, and bigger, and probably a little stronger. Joe, that being said, how do you have it?
So I'm going with the dog here. Again, I am not telling people not to use Kai Kara France, but this is a caution tale of recency bias and narrative. So the recency bias is obviously people are looking at what KKF did against, you know, the Pettis cousin, who I don't think is a very good fighter. The series of wins post Ultimate Fighter that KKF has rolled off were on the very competitive Chinese regional scene. He has got 7 losses, 6 of which occurred in very suspect regional scenes or regional promotions. Now, why is the 18-1 record of Pavan not suspect? I looked at each one of his opponents. One, I'd argue that the regional promotion in Brazil is better than the Chinese regional promotion and even the Australian regional promotion. You know, most of his opponents had winning records. The vast majority of them did. Now here's the real narrative and what Pavi is fighting for. So after he won that split decision on the Dana White's Contender Series, he went out, not exactly that night, but, you know, after that, went out with his girlfriend. Someone grabbed her or groped her, not wanting to kind of get into an altercation and jeopardize, you know, his UFC contract. He decided to be the bigger man and walk away. He got on his motorcycle. His girlfriend got on the back. The person who groped her and this person's friend got in a car. At a stoplight, they crashed into the motorcycle with the car. Both went flying. Pavia got injured. The girlfriend got put into a coma and died several days later. You know,
down or talking about
what are we doing here?
I am telling you why this guy is motivated to win. Retirement. The girlfriend's father came up to him and said, "Dude, we're so proud of what you did. The best way to honor my daughter is for you to continue fighting." So that's what this guy is fighting for. That's the narrative. I know I'm Mr. Narrative. Look, I don't think Kai Kara France is a world beater. I would say use him, but 18-1. I don't think the record's inflated. I am going to take a shot as a dog. You know, we are looking for dogs here. I'm going to go with the Brazilian. There's enough Brazilians on this card where he shouldn't feel like he's a fish out of water. So I am going to go with him. Although I will have shares of KKF, but he will be my least owned fighter in that upper tier.
Okay, I just need to say really quickly before we, his last 3 opponents, the before the Contender Series, the first guy down has a good record. I think it's 32-17. The 2 before that have losing records. So I think we could say it's a mixed bag.
Those are probably the only 2. Or there might be 1 more that has losses.
I mean, he's still fighting fighters with losing records, Joe.
Let's get by. Let's go to Shane Young at 9,100 taking on Austin Arnett at 7,100. Young is the favorite, -320. Arnett +260. For me, Arnett gets hit a lot. I want to know and isn't very good. He won against the gassed out Humberto Bandidai last time out. What Shane Young are we going to see? You know, he made his UFC debut on short notice, up weight class against Volkanovski, and now he's got Rolando Dai D is who he won last time out. And I said earlier, D is terrible, and he is, but which Shane Young are we going to see? In that fight, he was pressure, move forward, aggressive. He was Volkanovski-esque in that fight. And that kind of guy could have great success against Arnett, who I don't think is very good. Joe, unless you have any sad stories, let's keep the fight breakdown here.
No sad stories.
Younger Arnett.
The story is that Young scored 130 DraftKings points in that fight. Now, I looked at, like, my mental recollection of that fight was that he did not look overly impressive against Dai because everybody else seems to finish Dai very quickly. However, when I went back and looked at it again and had some conversations with our good friend, Mr. Apley, he reminded me that, like, he really racked up DraftKings points. I also think he's probably going to be under-owned. He looked a short notice replacement going to decision against Volkanovski. That actually has a pretty good look. And I thought he was just going to dominate Dai, which is maybe why I was mentally, my recollection was that he didn't, you know, look as good as he should have. However, I think he'll be lesser owned in the upper tier. I certainly like him a lot more than Adesanya in DraftKings. for his upside. So I am on Young in a pretty big way here.
Chris, are we going to be able to move through this fight quickly or no?
Huh?
Are we going to be able to move through this fight quickly or no?
Absolutely not. The first thing.
Are you an Austin Arnett truther?
No, I'm not. But the first thing I have to bring up is I think we're being awfully hard on Orlando D here. I mean, he's at least a serviceable kickboxer. I mean, he's not like, of course he is. He hurt, what's his name in their fight? He went to decision with him.
Who? I mean,
what's his name?
You know, the Leech, Li Jinglong.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's a derailment.
He also said Ishihara has got good takedown defense.
Wait. he's never fought Li Jingliang.
Yes, he did.
Li Jingliang is a welterweight.
Am I? All right, now I got to check this out.
Orlando D is a bantamweight.
Yeah, so, dude, you're missing a few weight classes here.
Orlando D is 1-3 in the UFC. That win is over Waleji Barron, which
I think he fought Kang, right?
He lost to Shane Young. He lost to Taruto Ishihara.
Alex
Caceres.
I don't know who I'm thinking of at the moment. I have to think about it. But anyway, right, disregard that whole thing. Anyway, I like Shane Young a lot here. I think, by the way, if anybody in chat knows who I'm thinking of, please shout it out because it's gonna bother me.
If you want to make fun of him, go ahead and type some fun.
No, don't do that. Don't listen. Yeah. Don't listen.
Somebody just said we love Chris.
He needs some help.
And somebody else is upset at Joe for not making a Chase Sherman or who is it, guys? Chase Sherman or
James Tahuna?
James Tahuna reference.
Well, so, our boy Chase, like I want him back in the UFC. I got college to pay for. Like he's coming off of
he's going to win his first fight back and bankrupt.
We all know that Chase Sherman is great against undersized Chinese fighters who fought on the Chinese regional scene. So let's bring him back to the UFC so I can pay off college.
They're going to give him Yao Zhang.
I'll actually try to go pretty quick since I wasted a lot of time with my nonsense. I like Shane Young a lot here. I consider him to be like a poor man's Corey Sanhagen. He doesn't have as good in and out movement. He's not quite the wrestler or the leg kicker, but he can get creative with his combinations. He likes the pressure. He's a good boxer. He can wrestle a little bit. Also, he's good at reactive takedowns, which I like a lot in this matchup against the guy in Austin Arnett, who's eventually or sometimes at least going to try to flurry forward. I think it's good to have that wrestling in his back pocket. Joe mentioned already that he racked up a lot of points. He can take quite a shot. He took a lot of clean shots from Orlando D and kept moving forward. So the durability is going to be important here. And I don't think the Volkanovski loss means anything. I mean, Volkanovski has pretty much swallowed up everybody he's ever fought. So not really concerned about that. I like Shane Young Tong here. I agree that he's going to be under-owned probably in the sea of, $9,000 players. I think he scores big, and I'm going to have a lot.
Devontae Smith, 8,600, taking on Dong-Hyun Ma, who has changed his name. It was Dong-Hyun Kim, the maestro. Now it's Dong-Hyun Ma, who is the underdog at plus 215. The comeback on Devontae Smith is plus 255. Chris, how do you have this fight?
I basically think that this fight can I think Ma has a path to victory. I think if he uses his clinch wrestling and his grindy style up against the fence like we've seen previously, I think he can win because we've seen Devontae's takedown defense is not great. He famously lost to John Gunther in a fight where he probably should have won. I mean, we don't give enough
credit. He gassed out.
He did. And, I mean, we don't give enough credit to how tough Gunther is because if you watch that first round, it's a miracle he didn't die in the cage. But be that as it may, in his contender series fight, Smith had a guy in on his legs and he finished him with the Travis Brown elbows. But that's not takedown defense. You can't rely on that every time. And so it does worry me. If Ma tries to wrestle, I think he could have some success there. But otherwise, I think Smith is just going to be much faster. He hits way harder, and he's way more aggressive. I think Ma, when he's not clinch wrestling, he likes to basically have a slow one-shot kickboxing match, and Devontae Smith is not going to be having that, I don't think. So I think this fight can go one of two ways. I think pretty early on you're going to know which fight you're going to get, but my money is going to go on Devontae Smith for the knockout.
My take on this fight is that it's Devontae Smith really early or Donghyun Ma is going to run away with it. I will say someone in chat, John Owen, just said he's a Chris Olsen truther. So if we can figure out a way to ban John Owen, that would be good.
No, I'm going to be sending him some swag to the VIP area. He's going to come right this way.
Joe, how do you have this fight?
Well, I mean, look, we all know Chris has got very low standards for takedown defense. Geez. I mean, you know, when he says Ishitara, who got taken down.
Oh my God! Watch the fight again, Joe.
Dude. That's like saying like a one-legged man in an ass-kicking contest is good, right? I mean, he got taken down 12 times.
But in between there were some things that he did. That's not a contradiction at all.
Oh my God! My God! Okay. Wow. Okay.
Anybody curious can watch the fight. Go ahead.
Watch that fight. I was there live at it. Okay. So
I had a better view than you did then.
You probably did. Let's talk about this fight. I kind of agree with everything you guys said. I mean, I think Smith early. I mean, if the fight gets later in distance, you know, Smith could. I mean, let's not forget Maestro in that fight of the year against Polo Reyes. That was an awesome fight. We know he could take a punch. And he's been off for a while too. I think he's coming off of a pretty sizable layoff here. So that's kind of part of the narrative too. Let's say Smith, I'm not nearly as confident in the pick. But I do think that if he sticks around, Ma could kind of steal this decision if he stays around. But I guess officially I'll pick Smith.
Jimmy Crude, 8,300 taking on Smile and Sam Alvey at 7,900. Crute the favorite, minus 135. Comeback on Alvey is plus 115. Joe, break it down.
Okay, so it's a perfect stylistic matchup for Alvey. I mean, you've got a guy that is a pressure-forward fighter against a guy who likes to fight moving backwards and counter punches. So stylistically, this is a great fight for Alvey. Now, I do have some concerns here. Alvey is generally not a good DraftKings play when he is priced up as a favorite. There has been some odds movement in Alvey's favor here. I mean, he's very close to having odds value on this card. Now, obviously, short notice, flying to Australia. He does have a lot more experience. I certainly think that, you know, looking for those sub 8K guys that Alvey should be given some consideration. However, you know, his ceiling is very low because he is not a high volume guy. However, if he does win, even with that low ceiling, given his price point, he could still be a worthwhile play.
The ceiling is like 105 though, which is not terrible.
Well, I mean, I don't even, you're giving him a much higher ceiling than that's if he gets a finish.
If he gets a
first, but that is part of the ceiling. It may be a small part, but it is
right.
A part of the ceiling.
Yeah, I think the more realistic ceiling is a decision win with, grappling points for Alvey, yeah.
Probably.
Yeah, I disagree. I think Alvey's path to victory is the counter knockout.
Well, look,
it's the first round
100,
the second
that.
Round 80, the third round 60.
I would love that.
Yeah, but we've seen him take his share of boring decisions.
Yeah, I don't think he'll do it against Crute. Maybe Crute gasses out. I was not super impressed with Crute last time. I thought he looked okay. He kind of got the finish after his opponent gassed. I'm going to actually, despite my concerns about the short notice, Alvey is not cutting nearly as much weight now that he moved up to light heavy. So, I mean, if this fight was at middleweight, knowing some of the struggles he had cutting to middle, I would be a lot more concerned about the short notice. I'm going to pick Alvey here.
See, I like Crute for his volume, but Alvey live in GPPs for the knockout power. Chris, you going to my side or Joe's side?
Well, I have my own concerns about Sam Alvey, namely that he's Sam Alvey. That's the thing.
Hey, he is a treasure, my friend.
Oh, God, I can't.
I'm picking against him, but he is still, like, he's in the MMA Facebook groups. He talks to people. Like, he's
No, you're right. But, I mean, so does Ben Saunders. I mean, we pick against him all the time.
I like Ben Saunders.
He's still a good dude.
I know. But, I mean, we got to be cold and rational here, my friend.
We do.
Look, I honestly can't believe we've come this far and nobody's mentioned that he just got knocked out by Lil Nog. I think that bears mentioning. I think the reason he got knocked out as badly as he did was because he actually tried to be first in that fight a lot more than he had recently. He was popping a jab out there. You know, he was trying to throw combinations. The problem is he's such an upright janky striker, and that's never going to change. And so when he tries to go first, he just leaves himself so wide open, and he gets caught. And when you try to brawl with him, he almost does a windmill with his arms. And the only thing that he can do, which is why most of his fights look the way they do, is plant his feet and land the counter shots. And he's good at it. They're fast. They're accurate. But I mean, look, Kaikar France has fast hands. He's defensively responsible. I mean, that's about it. We know that from his last fight that he's got.
Wait, you say Kaikar France?
It's not him.
Jimmy Crute. Okay. Thank you. We know from the last fight that he's got jujitsu. They're probably not going to use it here. Alvi is notoriously difficult to take down. I just don't think it's going to matter. I don't think Alvi. How much money has been spent on guys saying, well, this time Alvi's gonna, I mean, he basically fights the same way. And when he tries to come out of his comfort zone, he gets punished for it. He needs a very specific kind of fight to win. Namely, like Marcin Prochniak, like literally a guy who's going to just keep his hands down and march forward at him. That kind of guy he can beat pretty easily. Otherwise, I don't have a lot of faith. And in case you can't tell, I'm taking Jimmy Crute here. I think 8,300 is a great price. I'm going to be all over.
All right, let's move on to my most confident pick of the night. Montana De La Rosa, 8,800, taking on Nadia Kassem at 7,400. Excuse me. De La Rosa minus 255. Kassem is plus 215. Chris, do you know which way I am leaning in my most confident pick of the night?
I hope so. I think you're going to lean with me with De La Rosa.
Dear God, yes. I'll do a tiny bit of intro. Sorry to cut you off. This is how strongly I feel about it. Nadia Kassem won her UFC debut against Alex Chambers, who was basically an atom weight fighting at strawweight. And Alex Chambers took her down three times. And each of those times, Kassem was able to sweep her. Montana De La Rosa has fantastic BJJ. If she ends up on top, this fight's over.
Nadia Kassem. And Kassem missed weight by 5 pounds in that fight.
Yeah. It's like Kassem, I get De La Rosa's striking isn't good. There's going to be times to fade her. If Nadia Kassem takes my money, am I a little worried about the ceiling of De La Rosa? Like, she doesn't get it down in the first round. It takes her a little bit and she only scores 70 or 80. Sure. But I'm also getting a discount off those $9,000 fighters, and people tend to avoid women's mixed martial arts fights. I like De La Rosa as a play, especially in tournaments. Okay, Chris, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, I like De La Rosa too.
But
I picked her in our official staff picks. I am not quite as confident for a couple of reasons. Nadia Kassem, the takedown defense is awful, but there are certain things to like. She's an active striker. She can throw in combination. She has good jiu-jitsu off her back. So I'm kind of dubious about the fact that
not against De La Rosa. De La Rosa is
De La Rosa has a good crushing top game. I'll give you that. But that doesn't mean that she can't get anything done. Even if it's just to create a sweep somewhere. Now, to be clear, I think that De La Rosa will get it done if she gets on top, but I do think it's something that needs to be mentioned, that she's active off her back, because not a lot of people are throwing up submissions, so I think that's worth mentioning. But I am going to go De La Rosa here. I actually think De La Rosa, like if you look at her two fights between the first fight off the Ultimate Fighter and then the last one, I think her striking has come leaps and bounds already because, I mean, she's never going to be a great striker probably, but they basically just sat there, okay, you're long, throw your jab, keep it out there, and when they come to you, you can step back and counter strike. And she's being very efficient and doing very well with a limited skill set, and I like that about her. The one other thing that I just remembered that would kind of make me a little nervous is we haven't really seen her aggressively go for takedowns. And so, I mean, if this is a kickboxing fight, it's a lot closer. So that kind of makes me a little nervous. But ultimately, I do think that, Kassem's takedown defense is just way too bad for a wrestler not to exploit. I think she will. If she doesn't, it might get interesting. But I think the pick has to be Montana.
Yeah, if De La Rosa is not shooting within the first 3 minutes, I'll be screaming at my TV, even if I don't have a voice. Joe.
So at least, you know, De La Rosa has a live-in training partner, and the fact that her husband fights it the same weight as she does, Charles De La Rosa. Kassem is...
Is it Charles?
Yeah, yeah. That's his name, isn't it? That's her husband.
I'm even thinking the wrong first name.
Yeah, and they both fight at the same weight, which is kind of interesting.
A lot of mistaken identities today.
Yeah. Kassem, look, I'm going to be looking more forward to the weigh-ins than watching her fight, if you catch my drift.
Hang on. Sorry,
Charles Rosa.
Charles Rosa is a featherweight from Massachusetts. You're thinking Mark De La Rosa.
Yeah, Mark, sorry.
Yes, there
okay,
you go.
Okay, close enough. Okay.
Yeah, you guys are killing me today.
Good that you caught that.
I'm glad we got that going.
That you caught that. Okay. Yeah. I knew her husband fought it pretty much the same way that she did. So look, Astro Girl took Kassem down too easy. Kassem's a Muay Thai type fighter. Like I said, highly marketable. I'll leave it at that. I think this could be a good opportunity for Montana to, you know, show what she has. And, you know, kind of move up the 125 division. Obviously, this is the right weight class for Kassem as well, having missed weight by 5 pounds. I think the weigh-ins, I think the weigh-ins were the traditional weigh-ins for this card. If anybody has anything, I did not have a chance to watch.
Somebody just said it took her a long time to weigh in today and she looked a little rough.
Really? Okay. Any other color that people want to share on the weigh-ins? I have not had any opportunity to track how they went.
I haven't seen it yet.
Somebody in chat said the Ishihara weigh-in was intense, just in case anybody wants to go back. Oh,
okay. Well, Ishihara is a character. Okay, so I'm going to obviously pick De La Rosa here.
Somebody was trying to take Ishihara's girl last night at the club.
one of his beaches.
He got, let's move on. I opened us up to that.
Yeah.
Ricky Simone, 8,200, taking on Hani Yahya at 8,000. One of the most interesting fights on the card, in my opinion. And this is where things really pick up for me in terms of really liking this card. Lines closed a little bit, although it was always close, but now both guys are minus money. Ricky Simone, minus 115. Hani Yahya, minus 105. Simone, the relentless grappler. Yahya, the BJJ wizard. I lean towards Yahya just because... I don't think it's the case where the grappling is going to keep this fight on the feet, where Simone would have an advantage. Yahya finds a way to get fights to the ground, and Simone can be taken down. And that they stay on the ground for any length of time, I just think Yahya will find a sub eventually. But I do like both sides of this fight. I think it'll be a fun grappling-based fight that is good for DK. Joe, we're on you for this fight.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I started the week liking Simone, and then I went and I rewatched his fight against Dishvali and how easy it was for him to get taken down. I have since come over to Rani Yahya. This is a pick'em fight. I mean, the only thing that gave me pause for concern was, again, you know, the long trip. I like that there are other Brazilian fighters on this card, which I think helps. I think... Outside of Charles Oliveira, I believe Rani Yahya has 11 different types of submissions that he in the UFC. I've come kind of full circle now, and I'm going to pick Ronnie Yahya. I think he will get a finish by submission. I am concerned about his gas tank if this fight goes long. I think the momentum could shift to Simone, who has better cardio, if this fight goes long. But I'm going to take Ronnie Yahya by submission.
Yeah, like we're both picking Yahya, but it is a razor close fight. Mm-hmm. Chris,
one minor point of nittery here. If you came full circle, Joe, you'd be back on Simone. But
okay, fair enough. Need to point
that out. He did a 180. But
I did a 180. Okay.
To be fair, he's got you this time.
He does have me. I'll give the Renaissance man his due.
But as far as this fight goes, definitely close, definitely back and forth. I'm going to be picking Simone, just because I think that for as great at BJJ as Yahya is, obviously, we haven't really seen him take subs off his back. We've seen him hit sweeps before and things like that, of course. But the way Simone likes to get his takedowns up against the fence, those are going to be harder to do. I think Simone is a good enough scrambler to get away from a lot of those situations, a la David Tamer in the last fight that we saw against Charles Oliveira. He's obviously a motor. He never stops. He's a good DK play because we're probably going to have a lot of mat returns. And Joe mentioned it. Look, we've seen him gas before. Now, there were some extenuating circumstances in that Joe Soto fight. There was a big clash of heads.
Sorry, something you just caught. I don't think there will be any mat returns because if this fight hits the ground, that's where Yahya wants to be. He's not going to get up.
No,
he's
but he'll
play off his back.
But he wants to be a top. I don't think he'll play off his back for that.
He'll play off his back and look for a sweep. I don't think he'll get up.
I think he'll look for sweeps, and if he can't get him, he'll try to get back to his feet. I don't see him throwing up submissions from his back.
Agree to disagree, but okay. Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, so there's a lot of extenuating circumstances in that Soto fight. First of all, Yahya tried to kickbox for like the first 3 minutes and that probably gassed him out because he's not really used to doing that. Then he took the big cut to the head, so that all has to be considered, but we did see him gas out, and Simone can go for days and can trit anyone's gas tank. It's a tough call for me. I just think that on the feet, I think we agree that it's Simone, and I just think that he is quick enough and his get-up game is good enough that he's not going to stay down for long if he does get taken down by Yahya. So I'm going to give a very slight edge to Simone here.
Israel Adesanya, 9,600. Anderson Silva, 6,600. I don't know what planet we're living on. Anderson Silva's -525. The comeback on Silva is +415. Look, I'm picking Adesanya. That's too wide. Adesanya at 9,600. You need a crap ton of points to pay off value in what's going to be a striking fight. You better get it done in the first round. You better not be tentative. I don't mind Silva as a cash game punt. I've said that all week. It's just – and the picking Adesanya, but this close just feels – it's so hard for me to see Anderson Silva at +415. Maybe that's my emotions getting in the way. Chris – taking emotion totally out of it? Is Adesanya going to roll here?
Well, you're about to get more emotional when you watch the weigh-ins because Anderson Silva actually cried at the end of the weigh-ins when Joe was talking. But just because he said that, the fight game meant everything to him and he was grateful to have this one last shot, he said. Because Dana White has said, and I don't know if this is, Dana says a lot of things, but he said this is a title eliminator for both guys. So that probably sparks Silva's interest. He probably really wants this fight. I don't think he's going to get it because he's very slow and at this point and very tentative and, very reticent to pull the trigger. Before, when he was reticent, it's because he was setting up a counter shot. Now I think it's because it's just starting to go. And I think that Israel Adesanya is way too quick, puts his combinations together way too fluently. I think Silva is just going to get overwhelmed here, as much as I hate to say it. But the point of the 9,600 is a good point. I'm actually wondering if it doesn't make more sense just to stay off him because of that price point.
And to be popular.
Oh, yeah, of course. So that's another consideration. If this fight ever goes to decision, I mean, it's just a disaster, even if Adesanya wins. So that's a consideration. But as much as I hate to say it, unless Adesanya gets in there and is overwhelmed by the moment and the man, and we get kind of a staring contest, I think Adesanya is going to finish.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, I am not, it's well known, I am not a member of the Israel Adesanya fanboy club. I am eagerly awaiting the opportunity to fade him on the betting line. That'll occur the first time he fights a wrestler. Unfortunately, although 5 years ago, I think this would have been a perfect stylistic matchup for Anderson Silva. I just think the hand speed advantage is too much, and the athleticism is too much for him in this fight. So as much as I want to fade Israel Adesanya, I think in some way this is going to help me, because this is going to add to his legacy and make him like all that more a favorite when he goes against a guy like Jacare or Weidman. So I reluctantly have to pick Adesanya here to win. However, I don't see how you get 12X, which is probably what you're going to need for a GPP here. Obviously, he is incredibly safe in cash. But, you know, 9.6K, I just, you know, it's fadeable, you know, from that perspective. I will pick Adesanya. I don't mind having a share or two of Silva in GPPs. I don't like him in cash. I think there are better cash plays. But if you want to have a share or two of him in case he just brings the magic back, that's fine. But I am reluctantly having to pick Adesanya here, as much as I cannot wait for that opportunity to fade him.
Yeah, someone, excuse me, someone in chat just said, has anyone had an easier, it was Michael Iannone, by the way, should give credit. Has anyone had an easier path to a title shot? Vettori, injured Tavares, Brunson, old Anderson Silva.
Way to go. Who is this again? Michael?
Michael Iannone.
If I don't follow you, DM me so I could follow you, because you are the voice of reason, mate.
Well, that's the wonderful world of middleweight, I guess.
Yeah, you need to. Yeah, you are. I mean, Tavares had multiple injuries going into that fight, and I was with a member of his camp at that fight who told me that they were debating whether to allow him to fight. He could barely bend over. You know, so that's why he didn't get to. I'd love to see that fight again. But yeah, you're absolutely right, Michael. Shout out. Way to go. You and I are going to fade him together. So let's move on.
Well, look at that. You earned a fan there, Mike.
Main event time. Robert Whittaker, 8,900. Kelvin Gastelum, 7,300. Whittaker, the favorite in his home country, minus 225. Gastelum, the comeback, is plus 205. Whittaker coming off. Speaking, by the way, of relatively easy paths to a title fight, really, Gastelum's had one good win, and that was against Jacare Souza, when Souza accused him of greasing mid-fight, for what it's worth. Other than that, Michael Bisping, who was destroyed weeks earlier, he lost to Chris Weidman before that, so he's only won two fights in a row. Vitor Belfort, all right. Tim Kennedy, the ghost of Tim Kennedy, the ghost of Johnny Hendricks. He lost to Neil Magny. He beat the ghost of Nate Marquardt and lost to Tyron Woodley. Like, his only good win is his UFC debut, not his debut, his win over Jake Ellenberger, submission win. Other than that, man, but styles make fights.
Here we go.
I'm picking Robert Whittaker, but Kelvin, I have this Kelvin, the way I see this fight going is that ultimately Kelvin has that really, you know, basic 1-2, but it's basic, but it's effective. Whittaker is by far the more well-rounded mixed martial artist. I wish he went for takedowns more often. He has good defensive wrestling, obviously. Yoel Romero did not take him down in two fights. He beat Jacare. He beat Brunson. He is still underrated, I think. Here's my one concern, and it parallels everyone's saying Whittaker's got an iron chin and Gastelum's not going to be able to take him down and Whittaker will drag him into deep water and get a decision or a victory. And ultimately that's where I see this fight going, but it's 7,300. Gastelum, if he wins, is on the optimal lineup. There's a lot of people in Whittaker's price range, I think, who have higher ceilings. And we've seen what back-to-back wars against the same fighter, a guy like Yoel Romero, can do to you. Everyone was saying the same thing. Robbie Lawler is invincible. Robbie Lawler is invincible. Through those wars with Carlos Condon. And the first punch Tyron Woodley landed, he went clean out cold. I'm not calling for it here, but it could happen. Gaslam does have a wrestling background, which he mostly uses defensively, but is still, I don't think he's going to land any here. Romero couldn't take down Whitaker. He just has good boxing, and he hits hard. Whitaker should win this fight. I just, for me, especially after last week, and maybe it's just a little bit of, it definitely is some recency bias, I'm stacking. If you're playing me in cash games, I'm stacking. I'm not getting burned like I got burned last week just playing a Sun Tzu. So I'm going to stack this fight because I do think there'll be active strikers. Maybe not a ton of takedowns, but I think we'll see points here. I am picking Robert Whitaker, but I'm going to have plenty of Kelvin Gastelum in GPPs because he fits well. And if he wins, he's on the optimal lineup. Joe, what do you got?
So I don't think this is a good fight to stack, although I rarely do. But
yeah,
I'll tell you why, though. I don't, in particular, because I don't see any grappling points here. I see this as purely a stand-up fight.
So would you prefer, who in that range do you prefer in cash, or would you just go all the way down to Anderson Silva?
No, I mean, look, I think Buren is probably safer in cash.
He's not cheap enough to for you to fill out a roster.
Okay. Yeah. You know, I even like my guy Pavia. Oh, sorry. But
okay.
But the other thing here is this. Like, okay, so the way I see this fight is that I see it completely being a stand-up fight. I do agree with you, Sean, that if either one of these fighters is going to be in the optimal lineup, it's probably going to be Gastelum, you know, with the upset. I don't know that I see a scenario. Gastelum has never been knocked out. I don't see a scenario or too many scenarios where Whitaker makes the optimal lineup here. My one concern is this, and I talked about this on my Alpha Pod with Brett. Whitaker has been very public about the fact that he survived 10 rounds with a monster. You know, is he maybe overlooking Kelvin a bit here? I mean, in terms of stand-up, I see Kelvin Gastelum as having the hand speed advantage and Whitaker as having the punching power advantage. So I think that's going to be pretty interesting. I don't know that Gastelum could knock him out. I mean, I suppose it could happen. I more likely see a decision here. Both of these guys are ex-welterweights that moved up to middleweight. I am going to pick Whitaker here, although I will have a fair number of shares of Gastelum. I just don't see Whitaker as being a guy in that tier who's going to be on the optimal lineup. I could be wrong, but I'm going to pick Whitaker. But I think you could certainly fade this fight in GPPs if you wanted to. Unless you really felt strongly about Gastelum, in which case he would be a steal at 7.3K. But I think you could fade this fight in GPPs if you wanted to.
I have the exact opposite opinion. I'm going to be pretty heavy on this fight. Interesting. Chris?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I think we can all, you know, take a moment to reflect on the greatness that is Robert Whitaker for a second. When you watch his tape, I mean, he really is kind of a remarkable fighter. He gives you different looks all the time. He can double up the jab. He can body head. He can hook straight. I mean, all different combinations. He has been throwing more leg kicks of late. I mean, Gastelum may be faster. I'll concede that, but it's not like a blowout.
No, I think, agree.
I think Whitaker's plenty fast. And I don't know that Gastelum's striking defense is all that great. I mean, look, even in the third round of that Jacare Souza fight, he was lighting him up with big right hand. I mean, Gastelum took all of them. Credit to his chin, but I think he might be a little too hittable for a guy like Whitaker, who's going to be in and out, who's going to be cutting angles, who's going to be using his entire repertoire of strikes. I think that Gastelum is. Look, like I said, he got quick hands. He puts his combinations together. I just don't think it's going to be enough. And I can see that it might be hard to see a knockout, but Whitaker's always been a volume striker. That makes him a really good cash play, I think. I think he's maybe fine is a better word. I think he's a fine cash play at 8,900. I think he takes this. I think he picks Kelvin Gastelum apart. Could be wrong, but that's how I see it going.
All right, that's what we got for UFC 234. But before we head out, we have to do our hot takes. Anybody got any hot takes ready?
Well, that's my guy Pavai getting the upset victory over Kaikara France.
That counts as a hot take for sure. Chris, you got one?
Yeah. So Ishihara by decision. That's hot enough, right?
Oh yes, yes it okay. is. How about I'll be a little specific here. I gotta look at the middle fights. 10 of 12, so massive scores incoming. At least 10 of 12 fights end in finishes. That count good enough?
Wow. Yeah.
I hope so. That would make for a hell of a card.
I think this card is going to deliver. I have 10 of 12 fights ending in a finish.
And the highest scoring Australian fighter is Shane Young.
The highest scoring Australian fighter, Shane Young. Who else? Yeah.
Whitaker, KKF, you know.
Oh, Adesanya's in there. That's pretty hot.
Yeah. All right, yeah, we'll take it. We're counting Adesanya, so okay. Yeah.
All right, so there we go, guys. That's UFC 234. Make sure and support this podcast. Like the video on YouTube if you're watching on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel if you are. Make sure you also subscribe to RotoWire MMA and vice versa. If you're listening on the podcast stream, jump over and subscribe on YouTube. RotoWire.com/free, 10-day free trial to all their premium content. No credit card required. I have the Daily Fantasy Sniper at the DFS Sniper. Joe is Sun Tzu at Sun Tzu, SunTzu. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Thank you guys for all your support. The podcast continues to grow each and every week. Hit us up on Twitter. If you are in the 2019 MMA Ironman, the season-long yes. contest I am running. The first contest has been sent out. That went out today because I was taking registrants all the way until the last minute.
115, right, Sean?
115 for a total prize pool of $11,500. I kept it a little flat for year one. First prize, though, is still $2,000. Pay about the top 15% of the field, and we'll change things up as we go through. So the contest came out today. Moving forward, if you are in, as soon as DK salaries are released, you'll have the contest right away. Any issues, reach out to me on Twitter and ask anything you want. You have any questions, hit me up there.
And guys, just let everybody know that it's a Sunday card next week, not a Saturday card. You have the President's Day holiday on Monday, so they're doing a Sunday night card.
It is a Sunday card, which will be nice. I think we're still going to go on Fridays, correct,
yes.
gentlemen?
Yep. Probably, yes. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, guys. Nothing else. Good luck in your contest. We'll see you next week.
Cool. All
right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Okay, let's make